The headlines: President Raisi says Iranian armed forces will target, quote, the center of the Zionist regime if it makes the slightest move against Tehran. Swedish police report dozens of injuries during days of violent protests over the burning of the Holy Quran by a far-right anti-Islam group. And Russian President Vladimir Putin says sanctions by Western countries against Russia over Ukraine have led to the deterioration of their own economies. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's army has held a military parade to mark the National Army Day. The parade, held annually on April 18th, featured the latest indigenously produced military equipment of the army. Addressing the event, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said Iranian armed forces will target, quote, the center of the Zionist regime if it makes the slightest move against the Islamic Republic. Yusuf Jalodi has more.
Heavy stomps of marching soldiers and convoys of Iranian-made weapons paraded in Tehran and across the country on the National Army Day. All of the four branches of the military took part in the key parade, held at the presence of army officials and Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi. Addressing the ceremony, the president hailed the army's achievements despite the U.S. sanctions.
The defense industry fared the best amid the sanctions atmosphere. The Islamic Republic's army achieved significant capabilities during this period. Not only did the army defend the nation during the Iraq-imposed war on Iran, but it has stood with the people and for the people in all areas.
The parade featured the latest military achievements and weapons produced by the Iranian army, including radars, tanks, armored vehicles, drones, fighter jets, and missiles. This year's highlights were FAT-360 surface-to-surface missile, Labeg precision strike rockets, and Desfoul and Majid air defense systems. The Islamic Republic says it produces over 80% of its needed military hardware indigenously. In his address to the parade, the Iranian president said the country's show of power sends messages both to friends and enemies.
The preparedness of the army sends the message of hope to the friends of the Islamic Republic. There's also a message to the enemy. The enemy must know that the military might of our armed forces gives us a deterrent power. They must know that the smallest move made against our country and our nation would be monitored by the sharp eyes of our armed forces.
The National Army Day was designated in 1980, following a historic speech by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. There, he thanked the army for its role in the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution by announcing neutrality in the conflict between the former Pahlavi regime and the revolutionaries.
4 decades of arms embargoes have denied Iran access to even a bullet from other countries. The army says the parades today show that those bans have not harmed Iran's military capability. But in fact, they've been a blessing, since they prompted Iran to build up its own military arsenal so that its security is no longer tied to foreign arms. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
We were joined by journalist and political analyst Ali Jamanier. He said U.S. sanctions imposed on Iran over the past 4 decades have only strengthened the country's military capabilities.
It is true that the U.S. Sanctions started on Iran since 1979 by President Jimmy Carter at the beginning of the Islamic Revolution. What is also true that all these years, I mean more than 40 plus years so far, all these sanctions have strengthened Iran's capability and reliance on itself domestically in rebuilding its strength, its armament, its defense system, and also its local production. If you look at the Iran-Iraq war that was imposed on Iran in the 80s, we realized that Iran had almost nothing at that time and managed throughout the years to build this capability to the point that today we've seen last month, for example, it has bombed the location of the Israeli Mossad in Kurdistan, Iraq. Therefore, it is also standing against the Israelis in the naval battle in different places around the Middle East, imposing deterrence, and all that is due and thanks to the capability that Iran managed to build.
Iran makes further significant progress in developing unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs. A domestically built drone has recently passed its flight test and has become fully operational. The UAV named Gaza has been manufactured by the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and was unveiled last year. It can be used both in reconnaissance and combat missions. The drone is capable of carrying 13 bombs and a payload of 500 kilograms. Gaza has a flight endurance of 35 hours and can fly with a speed of about 350 kilometers per hour. Its flight altitude is also about 35,000 feet, while the operational range is some 2,000 kilometers. Iranian military experts and technicians have managed to develop a wide range of drones in recent years, making the country's armed forces self-sufficient in this arena. Iran says the atmosphere of the Vienna talks is still appropriate for the revival of the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The foreign ministry, however, has blamed the United States for delays in reaching an agreement.
The remaining issues between Iran and the United States are more than one. The messages exchanged over the past few weeks via EU Deputy Foreign Policy Chief Enrique Mora before and after his trip to Tehran are far from reaching solutions. The U.S. is responsible for constant delays in making appropriate decisions. A mere reply is not enough. Rather, a bare minimum must be done regarding the two issues. All aspects of the maximum pressure campaign against Iran, which was designed by the administration of former President Donald Trump, must be removed completely. Secondly, the Iranian nation should enjoy the economic benefits of the JCPOA in a completely tangible manner.
Khatibzadeh added that the U.S. has adopted a delaying tactic with regard to the talks. He stressed that there will be no agreement until a comprehensive agreement on all concerning issues is reached. Khatibzadeh said the 2015 deal will not be subject to any changes under a potential new agreement. He also slammed Washington's efforts to interfere in issues related to Iran, saying the release of Iran's frozen assets has nothing to do with any third parties. Khatibzadeh said the Islamic Republic will not allow the U.S. to meddle in such issues. He reiterated that Tehran acts according to the interests of its people. The spokesman also said that the Iranian government has not tied its economic policy to the sanctions removal, but is seeking to neutralize those curbs. A Palestinian rights group has urged the United Nations to hold Israel accountable for killing Palestinians in occupied territories.
UN experts and rapporteurs should investigate the Israeli violations and the targeting of Palestinian lives and bring to an end these Israeli practices. They should denounce the targeting and cold-blooded murder of Palestinians, bear their full responsibilities, and put into operation the use of universal jurisdiction mechanisms to achieve international justice, prosecute and hold to account persons charged with committing grave violations of the international humanitarian law.
The group also called on the International Criminal Court to investigate the Israeli violation of Palestinian rights. It accused the regime forces of extrajudicial killing, saying over 40 Palestinians have been killed this year alone. Tensions are running high in the West Bank as the regime has intensified its crackdown. Over the past days, Israeli forces attacked Palestinians across the occupied territories, including in the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in Al-Quds. Hundreds of people have been injured and detained in Israeli attacks since Friday. Meanwhile, reports say Israeli forces have entered Beit Hanun in the besieged Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip. We talked to our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, for an update.
Israeli tanks and armored caterpillar D9 bulldozers made an incursion into the eastern part of the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun area today. They raised the agricultural land in the area and they fired some shots towards the farmers in the area. This is according to people who live in the area and eyewitnesses in Beit Hanun. This recent Israeli incursion into Gaza comes amid the ongoing attacks against Palestinians, especially in Al-Quds. Some people here believe that this is a part of an Israeli provocation towards the Palestinian resistance, possibly trying to have them react to what's happening in Al-Quds and also in Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Israeli tanks and bulldozers haven't made such incursions for weeks now.
Swedish police say days of unrest in the country sparked by the burning of the Holy Quran by a far-right group has left dozens injured. According to the police, 26 officers and 14 civilians are among those injured during protests in several cities since Thursday. The unrest triggered by the far-right party has held a rally in a Muslim-dominated area and burnt a copy of the Holy Quran. The party, which is well known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stances, is intending to mobilize support ahead of the September elections. Its leader has been visiting cities and towns with large Muslim populations to divide the communities. Tensions continue to mount as there was another plan by a group to publicly burn copies of the Holy Quran. Police say those who commit violence are criminals with no links to the demonstrations.
Scuffles and unrest were reported in several spots across Sweden. Fierce clashes have broken out between police and protesters during demonstrations against a far-right group's intention to burn the Holy Quran. Violent skirmishes erupted between supporters of the Strom Kurs party and the opponents of the blasphemous plan. Clashes and demonstrations have been held in a couple of cities. Over a dozen police officers have also been injured since the unrest started. Meanwhile, police has backed the hardline party's plan, saying it would not revoke permission for a demonstration organized by the party, because this free speech threshold for doing that is very high in Sweden. That's why there have been reported clashes in locations that the hardline party either had planned or had demonstrations. Also, Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson came out in support of the far-right group, making remarks that have been deemed provocative. She said in Sweden, people are allowed to express their opinions, whether they are in good or bad taste. That is part of our democracy.
This has nothing to do with free speech. In reality, this has to do with trying to get people's attention away from real problems by blaming everything on immigrants, blaming everything on Muslims, blaming everything on people who are not white. And this is something that it's very difficult to campaign against when these forms of racism and these forms of Islamophobia are protected by the quote-unquote right on free speech. And this is what we're seeing now.
These remarks only fanned the fire of unrest across the country and drew condemnations from the Muslim world, like from Iran. Iran summoned the Swedish envoy and condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran, saying the blasphemy was committed under the protection of the Swedish police. Tehran said it would hold the Swedish government as accountable and expects an immediate reaction from Stockholm against the perpetrator, as well as practical measures to prevent such incidents. On Thursday, the hardline party held a rally in a heavily Muslim-populated area in Sweden. At the demonstration, the party leader burned a copy of the Holy Quran, ignoring objections from onlookers. Counter-protests broke out with demonstrators setting fire to security vehicles after police ignored calls to stop the far-right demonstration. Strom Kurs is well known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stances.
Instances of assaulting Islam, whether through officials or through publications, is rife in Europe. Take, for instance, the great Wilders, a Dutch politician who has made no bones about his hatred for Islam. Even French President Emmanuel Macron has publicly stated that he wants to reform Islam. And no one can forget the blasphemous cartoons by Charlie Hebdo magazine depicting the Prophet Muhammad in a vulgar manner. And all of this under the guise of freedom of expression. Moving on, Russia says it has destroyed hundreds more Ukrainian military targets as the war between the two neighbors is inching closer to its third month.
Russian artillery units during the night attacked 315 objects of the Ukrainian troops, 18 command posts, 22 artillery batteries, an OSA AKM anti-aircraft missile system, as well as 275 enemy strongholds and areas of concentration of manpower were destroyed.
The Russian Defense Ministry says different Ukrainian regions, including Kharkiv and Donetsk, were the target of the attacks. The eastern Luhansk region, local authorities say, Russia has now taken control of the town of Kremena. Moscow is also pushing its offensive to take control of the strategic port city of Mariupol. The Russian military claims it has already taken all urban areas of the besieged city. Meanwhile, the spokesman for the Ukrainian Defense Ministry says Russia is preparing to create a corridor with Crimea that declared its independence in 2014.
The occupant prepares for an offensive in eastern Ukraine in order to establish full control over the territory of Donetsk and Luhansk regions and to ensure the sustainability of a land corridor with the occupied territory of the Autonomous Republic of Crimea. The aggressor has now almost completed regrouping troops for an offensive in the eastern operating zone. The strengthening of the offensive grouping is implemented through the deployment of additional Russian units.
In western Ukraine, the mayor of the city of Lviv has confirmed the death of seven people in a Russian missile strike. Kharkiv local authorities say three more people died in Russian shelling of the city. Meanwhile, Ukrainians continue to flee their country. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 5 million people have already fled the country. The UN has warned that women and children fleeing the war zone are more vulnerable to exploitation. And Russia's president has once again deplored the West for imposing sanctions on its country over its military operation in Ukraine. During a cabinet meeting, Vladimir Putin said the sanctions by Western countries have led to the deterioration of their own economies. He noted that Russia withstood unprecedented sanctions pressure. He also underlined that the measures taken by those countries were to target Russia's economy and provoke panic in the markets and cause the banking system to collapse. However, he said the situation has been stabilizing, and after a short hype, demand in the Russian Federation has returned to normal. The West has slapped a wave of sanctions on Moscow, targeting elites, officials, and entities, as well as excluding several Russian banks from the SWIFT payment system. Western countries have also expelled dozens of Russian diplomats on alleged spying charges. And now, with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
Let me put the plate of zulbia and bamiye in the middle of the table. Okay, and a cup of hot water for my grandma. My grandma breaks her fast with a cup of hot water. And here we have a plate of dates, bread, cheese, and vegetables. Hope nothing is left behind. You know, my grandma is my guest tonight for iftar, and after serving iftar meal, I'm going to visit an exhibition where people of different regions of Iran put on display the iftar food items of their own certain region. Stay with me. The blessed month of Ramadan is a lunar Hijri month, which is of high significance for Muslims. Abstaining from eating and drinking or fasting during the day is the main feature of this month. In the vast land of Iran, with its different ethnicities and local customs, different foods are made which have their own special taste, smell, form, and color. A glance at different customs and traditions of the ethnic groups of Iran show that culinary traditions during the month of Ramadan display a beautiful picture. The foods in each region of Iran are prepared based on the climate, local etiquettes, the foodstuffs, and local crops. These foods then gradually become known and recognized as the customs of these regions. I am now at the exhibition of the foods of Iranian ethnic groups. These foods are prepared during the month of Ramadan. Here there are several different pavilions. Each of them has the foods of a certain ethnic group. Let's take a look at the pavilions. Here is the pavilion of Gilan. The traditional foods of Gilan that are cooked during the month of Ramadan mostly include asha of different types, kuku and fereni. The other type of food available in Gilan during the month of Ramadan is reshte khoshkar. Reshte khoshkar is a popular sweet in Gilan. A Gilani lady is busy making reshte khoshkar here. It smells great! Azerbaijan Pavilion. Ashadugh Fereni and rose flower jam are three foods which Azeris of Iran put on the table of iftar. This pavilion is filled with the aroma of rose water jam. This jam is both served as dessert as well as being used along with tea. In this pavilion, you can smell bread. Bersag bread. The people of Kurdistan bake this bread. It's made of flour, sugar, oil, egg, milk, salt, and turmeric. It's a delicious and nourishing bread for iftar. I am now at Khuzestan Pavilion. Lagimat is the popular food served in different cities of Khuzestan province, particularly in Ahvaz. Lagimat is a sweet which looks like zulbia and bamiye and is served with bitter coffee. Baking this sweet is also common among the people of other southern provinces of Iran like Bushehr and Hormozgan. There are a lot of pavilions left, but I cannot go into details in a brief radio program. There are many delicious foods to talk about in the pavilions of Hamedan, Isfahan, Kerman, Khorasan, and other provinces of Iran. Iran is the beautiful land of colors, tastes, and designs, which all create a unique picture of the rich Iranian culture. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
It's an economic crisis of mammoth proportions. Sri Lanka appears to be in a state of economic freefall. Shortage of fuel, medicines, and basic stuff, along with a foreign currency shortage, has led to protests and social disorder. And now the country is looking for another IMF loan. Hi, I'm Kavitah Wai. The Sri Lankan economic crisis, the topic of today's edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, Sri Lanka facing its worst financial crisis in more than 70 years. Food prices have risen by a record 30% in March alone, grappling with Asia's highest rate of inflation, a currency collapse, and fuel shortages. Then, dissatisfaction with the Rajapaksa family, whose members hold several top positions in government. Cabinet of ministers resigned in full, with Sri Lankans protesting, leading to deadly street protests demanding the president's resignation. That's the political crisis of the story. And we will also take a look at the mounting foreign debt. Cash-strapped Sri Lanka has taken short-term loans from India, and China now is looking to the IMF again. Is the Western-backed IMF the source of the economic crisis?
Sri Lanka is in a crisis. Calls from the public and opponents of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa to resign. The reason is Sri Lanka's worsening economic situation. People have held demonstrations for weeks over lengthy power cuts and shortages of gas, food, and other basic goods. Nearly all cabinet ministers and scores of parliament members have left the government over public anger.
And I'm here because it's not enough to just reshuffle the cabinet. We want accountability. It's not just resignation that we want. We want people to take accountability for their actions. We want these leaders to take accountability for their actions.
But Sri Lanka's beleaguered president says that he will not be resigning. Opposition MPs have also rejected his invite to form a national unity government. Rajapaksa has lifted controversial state of emergency measures following further protests. The president had invoked the law on April 1 after protests outside of his house. Parliament Speaker has told Parliament there will be acute food shortages and that the economic crisis is just the beginning.
Yes, I am expecting it to get a lot worse, and unfortunately they are unable to contain it because the people who created the crisis are very much still in charge of the economic management. So I think it's behaviorally impossible for them to acknowledge that they have made a huge blunder and they have to reverse all these incorrect economic policy.
The economic meltdown in Sri Lanka spiraled as the Sri Lankan rupee plunged to become the world's worst performing currency. Sovereign dollar bonds dropped to trade at deeply distressed levels, while the stock market fell a further 2%. Over the past few months, Sri Lanka has been facing a dire financial crisis on multiple fronts. People have been suffering power cuts of up to 13 hours, massive inflation, and a shortage of food and basic goods.
The situation in Sri Lanka is dire. It's really spiraling out of control unless urgent action is taken. But what can the government do? Well, in the latest push, it is going to try to tame inflation by raising interest rates. Let's take a look at online viewers and see what they had to say about what is happening in that country. Now, this post shows the depth of the problem. Today, I measure inflation at a stunning 68% for the year. The balance of payments crisis is sinking the Sri Lankan economy. The only way to serve the Sri Lankan rupee and to ease the crisis is to install a currency board. Well, taking a look at this particular post, Sri Lanka's currency plunges to the world's worst performing currency, which has led to an economic meltdown, the rupee shedding a third of its value against the dollar as deepening crisis raises the threat of a default. Next is the Sri Lankan problem, just the tip of the iceberg in South Asia. This viewer has said India on guard as Sri Lanka's economy crumbles. Pakistan faces constitutional crisis, which we saw Imran Khan being ousted, and other neighbors are battling uncertainties. Now, this analysis was the result of a tweet. Sri Lanka's political turmoil risks derailing the economy further. It was worth now taking a look at the analysis, and in this introspective was what we picked out as a highlight. In recent political cycles, economic reform agendas have been promptly reversed by the next government, resulting in policy whiplash and macroeconomic damage. This trend must be reversed. All right, our guest joining us for this edition of the Q&A is Bhavani Fonseca. She's a lawyer and senior researcher at the Center for Policy Alternatives, who joins us from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Bhavani Fonseca, welcome. The economic indicators for Sri Lanka are pretty bad. Inflation, power cuts as a result, protests that are happening, political uncertainty. Tell us how you think this island nation has actually gotten to this point. The government says that it's really a result of COVID-19. Do you buy it?
Thank you, Khalid, for having me on the show. And this is a very unprecedented time in Sri Lanka where we're having a political and economic crisis. It's largely due to the mismanagement and lack of planning from this government. I think the blame is put on various things, including the pandemic by this government, but it really speaks to not having proper plans or policy incoherence and just really inability to address the multiple crises.
All right, we appreciate that. Let's now turn to Professor Mona Haran, who joins us. He's the director of the Center for East Asian Studies at Christ University, joining us from Bangalore. Professor Mona Haran, welcome. Staying afloat economically for Sri Lanka is something that is going to be very difficult. It is in a tight squeeze. It has only a few options. One of them it has decided to go ahead with is subscribing to the IMF and taking a loan from that institution. But it has done so 16 times before. Isn't the situation that it is in now because of loans from institutions like the IMF?
Okay. So I would say, to be fair to IMF, if we look at the IMF loans generally to countries, they are actually not too much of strings attached, unlike you have the bilateral loans that Sri Lanka either borrows from China or some other countries, where in general IMF goes by the special drawing rights, which Sri Lanka has special drawing rights to around 100 million or so. If you stretch it further, the recently they got the loan to the tune of around 700 million or 900 million to the tune of $1 billion. So this comes with low interest rate, and that is preferable.
It's time now for our Info News section. Lots of economic news that we looked at. First, since the IMF is one of the topics of our program, in this piece of news, it shows how it is hard at work. And in this case, it covers Ukraine, another country falling victim to the IMF debt and political cycle. As is evident, the country is war-torn, and the IMF seems to think that it can help it. Now, moving on to the next topic, U.S. recession alarm bells are ringing off for that to be something in the works. There's no denying it. This entry has said that the recession shock is coming. Major U.S. bank is issuing that warning. Bank of America went on to say soaring inflation raises the risk of a major economic downturn. And that is not good news for the U.S. that is experiencing record inflation in that country. On to our next piece of news. Poor people are dying earlier. Bad news for the U.K. Britain's class divides based on this are very much alive. Now, according to this, 4 out of 10 male deaths in the most deprived areas are premature. It's worth dwelling on that fact, really. 40% of all male deaths in the most deprived areas are actually avoidable, compared to just 18% in the most affluent regions of the UK. And our final pick covers France. France held the first round of the elections. At this point, it is obvious that there's a tight, not as tight a race between Marine Le Pen and the current or incumbent president Emmanuel Macron. We're going to take a look at 5 years of Macron and its economy, where, according to the source, has trickled down in drips and drops. That's going to be the topic of our next program. However, we'd like to hear from you for our future programs. If you have a topic that you'd like for us to cover in your part of the world, please send us an email and let us know.
Listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The Sri Lankan economic crisis is one of the most severe cases when it comes to an economy that is faltering, it seems like, in almost every facet, which is what we are going to look at in this in-depth section. First of all, Sri Lanka is trapped in spiraling debt. There's no question about that. When it comes to the top lenders, here they are. You're looking at international sovereign bonds coming in at 36.4%. The Asian Development Bank, ADB, 14.6%. Next up, Japan, 10.9%. And then you have China at 10.8%. But here's the big one. The big one here, as you can see, covers Sri Lanka's foreign debt in terms of the top lenders in this area. That includes institutions like the IMF. And we're going to get into that a little bit more. Let's now focus on the foreign exchange crisis that it's experiencing. Obviously, that is also huge. Its foreign exchange reserves actually saw a drop of 70% in the past 2 years. This is said to be the reason the country is struggling to pay for essential imports. For how could they? The country has only $2 billion in foreign currency reserves, and yet the total debt repayment is $7 billion for the year 2022. That's a huge difference. Now, to give you an idea about how bad the inflation is, here are some prices for everyday goods. Let's take a look at this. It's in their currency, but we're going to focus on the percentage. For rice, 64%, onions, 60%, and then potatoes, 74.8%. That's according to the figures coming from the Central Bank of Sri Lanka. So there you can see just a snapshot of basic items, as we just mentioned there. Now, what happens with economic indicators that are now so bad? In one simple word, chaos. You have fuel supply shortages. This is a snapshot again, leads to power cuts, which then impacts manufacturing, and then you have shortages in things like paper, if you can believe that. That's just one example. Think about it. The country has actually ran out of paper. So that's how desperate that country is when it comes to its economic crisis. Now, the basic rules of economics comes into play here, and it's evident. When you have expenditures that are greater than the income of the country, that means that they're borrowing more than they're producing. That's just basic economics, and that is the case with Sri Lanka. Now, you can't ignore what the COVID-19 pandemic actually did to its economy, just like many other nations. For COVID, there were the Easter bombings that cut tourism revenues for the government, and then in turn, they had to use foreign reserves to pay off their debt. In the case of foreign reserves in 2018, it had $6.9 billion, which has now gone down to $2.2 billion for the year 2022. That's according to an IMF briefing. And then you're looking at the decrease, for example, in GDP for 2020, 3.5% it declined, and the fiscal deficit climbed to 11.1%. And finally, something that many don't know about Sri Lanka and its agricultural industry. It was an initiative that the government set forward in doing. It was an effort to move towards organic farming. The government banned the use of chemical fertilizers because of that bad decision. The steep drop in crop yields was the result of that. And that obviously made the country then become more reliant on foreign imports. And of course, once that happens, one obvious outcome is that foreign reserves will even decrease by more. Now, you have a newly elected finance minister. I mean, really new. He's been in the job for only days now. And this is what he intends to do about the economy, at least one of the steps he's going to take.
Basically, if we can restore the supply chain, if we can provide these necessities on time, we can get our tourism back on track. That will bring dollars in. We need to protect our export industry. We need to protect our supply chain. So if we can do that, I feel if we can, I mean, the numbers are still being worked out. Yeah. I just taken over a day or two ago. Yeah. But a rough figure is probably we need about 3 billion infusion during the next 3 to 6 month time, from now to 3 to 6 months, for us to meaningfully come out of it.
Okay, $3 to $6 billion is what he said there. All right, let me bring back our guests in order to get a breakdown on this. We have Professor Mona Haran, who's the director of the Center for East Asian Studies at Christ University, who joins us from Bangalore. So, Professor Mona Haran, looking at soaring inflation, you have power cuts, you have different facets of the economy that have broken down. which has led to the protests that we have seen, and there have been deadly protests requesting the government to step down, in which the parliament has actually resigned en masse. What are we looking at when it comes to this economic crisis for Sri Lanka?
Okay, I would say it is not just about COVID-19. There are five other reasons I would point out. Number one, the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. So if you put together COVID and Ukraine war, of course, COVID is one of the reasons, but if you put Russian-Ukraine war and COVID-19, you would see the rising fuel prices like petroleum and diesel and things like that. And then you have this cooking oil, the cooking oil prices. And then you have fallen tourism, foreign remittances, fallen FDI, and so on and so forth because of this together COVID-19 and Russian-Ukraine war. This is reason number one. Reason number two, the very security situation. Sri Lanka came out of ethnic war in 2009. So economy was slowly coming back. But by then, you had in 2019, April, Easter attacks. Put together again, this impacted Sri Lanka's tourism industry, impact on FDIs and foreign remittances.
All right, very well. Thank you for that. Let's bring in Bhavani Fonseca, lawyer and senior researcher at the Center for Policy Alternatives, who joins us from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Bhavani Fonseca, the IMF is the focus of my question. It's known to give out loans, but then you have political attachments that has been cited based on their track record with countries, but it also creates this cycle of debt. Please explain that to us and why these IMF loans are so controversial, especially when it comes to the case of Sri Lanka, which appears to, again, want to opt for a loan from the IMF.
Well, I mean, this is also a concern that IMF and other financial assistance, loans, raises a lot of issues in terms of sovereignty and what it means to Sri Lanka and Sri Lankans. And this is something we need to really look at because a lot of Sri Lanka's debt is linked to getting into these loan schemes that has got us into this problem.
Sri Lanka has faced a series of problems in recent years which compounded the country's structural issues. In 2018, the country faced a constitutional crisis. The following year, hundreds of people at churches and luxury hotels were killed in the 2019 Easter bombings. And from 2020 onwards, it has been grappling with the COVID-19 pandemic. The crisis has battered the economy, as well as leading to mounting foreign debts, rising inflation, and economic mismanagements by the government. Facing a massive deficit, the government slashed taxes in a doomed attempt to stimulate the economy, but the move backfired, instead hitting government revenue. That prompted rating agencies to downgrade Sri Lanka to near default levels. That meant that the country lost access to overseas markets. The South Asian nation no longer has enough dollar reserves to buy essential items like food, fuel, in order to power vehicles or even generate electricity.
The reason for the shortages is not a shortage of any commodity, but the shortage of dollars. And the shortage of dollars have few reasons. One is the price control on dollar, because that's when you have a price control, it incentivizing importers to import more and discouraging the exporters because they are paying a lower price. Second is, I would say, the excessive money printing or quantitative easing, because when you add more liquid or more money into the system, those money chases behind imports.
To stay afloat and get itself out of the economic quagmire, Sri Lanka has few options outside of turning to the International Monetary Fund, but the island nation has so far received 16 IMF loans since it joined the financial institution in 1950. But the IMF loans come with political attachments. The loans are said to create a cycle of debt that forces the country to just pay that debt. Austere loan conditions reduce economic growth and deepen and prolong financial crises, creating severe hardships for the poorest people in borrowing countries and strengthening local opposition to the IMF.
When it comes to Sri Lanka, it has been the victim of what many don't realize, and that is the IMF. The International Monetary Fund, But what does the IMF have to do with Sri Lanka's economic crisis? Well, let us count the ways. First of all, it is interesting to note that the island nation has so far received 16 IMF loans since it joined the financial institution in 1950. It is now going to go for another loan, which could spell more disaster for the country. But why are IMF loans deemed to be bad? They're supposed to help countries who are in need of money to pay off their debt. But the truth is otherwise. Just listen to what renowned American author John Perkins, best known for his book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, has said about institutions like the World Bank and the IMF.
They buy a very, very cheap debt on these countries, and then they go back to the countries and say, hey, you've got to pay us a lot of money, and we'll litigate against it because we're holding this paper, and we're going to go after you. And if you can't pay in cash, then pay in resources or pay in cheap labor markets or whatever. We weren't helping the poor get better lives. We were helping the rich get richer. We were helping the United States colonize a great deal of the world, with U.S. corporations primarily.
There's no shortage of insights into the inner workings of these institutions and the destructive role that they play in a country's economy. Here's another example, describing this time, by an Australian journalist, writer, scholar, and documentary filmmaker. He, however, puts the blame on the U.S. He has said there are many examples of the United States using the World Bank and International Monetary Fund to shore up supports for foreign policy, naming the first Persian Gulf War as an example. In his undertaking of third world debt, taken up in his documentary War by Other Means, he revealed that the money owed to the rich world by the third world is far greater than the aid or charitable donations they receive. Pilger has stated that the multinationals' global domination demonstrates how the West has increased its stranglehold on poor countries by using the might of the IMF, World Bank, and World Trade Organization to control their economies. To conclude here, if you are in debt, stay away from these institutions. You may end up more than you bargained for. That does it for me.
My final thoughts, it's sad to see that Sri Lanka is giving the IMF serious thoughts for getting another loan, which at this point, it seems like they're going to go ahead with it. The IMF said it was very concerned about Sri Lanka's ongoing economic crisis and that it had started technical level engagements with the finance ministry and the central bank. What Sri Lanka needs to do, however, is to have some of its debt erased or refinanced, not to go to the IMF or the World Bank to have that refinanced. Because as we know, the debt spiral will come into play, and of course, it's the poor people who are going to get the short end of the stick. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you on board. Please send us your comments and questions. We always appreciate them. For me, Kovit Hatley, it's goodbye until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.